Rick Ganley, this is NHPR News at 9:06.
Radio. I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Last month, as many college students were settling in for a new academic year, President Obama went on a college tour of his own with a stern message for campus administrators: make higher education more affordable.
We cannot price the middle class out of a college education. That's why I proposed major new reforms to make college more affordable and make it easier for folks to pay for their education.
The president offered several ideas. First, a rating system for colleges to include such factors as tuition, debt loads, graduation rates, and student earnings upon graduation. Then, once that system was up and running, the federal government would aim more financial aid to those colleges ranked as a better value. But this idea has caused some consternation among higher education officials nationwide and in New Hampshire. In fact, affordability may be an especially sensitive topic for the Granite State, where students graduate with the country's largest amounts of debt and where we rank last in the nation in per capita state support to higher education. Still, even with our own college affordability conundrum, New Hampshire did actually get a shout out in the president's speech. Mr. Obama mentioned Southern New Hampshire University and its innovative College for America that's already shown the potential to dramatically lower tuition. Today in The Exchange, a Granite State take on this White House tough talk aimed at college costs. Let's hear from you this hour. Why do you think higher education is so expensive? Is it still worth it? And how might the cost be lowered? Also, what do you think of the president's idea to rank colleges based on an assessment of their value? Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. With me in studio is Paul LeBlanc from Southern New Hampshire University, which I just mentioned. And Paul LeBlanc, welcome back. It's great to see you.
It's great to be here.
Also with us, Todd Leach, Chancellor of the University System of New Hampshire. He's new to that position. And congratulations, Todd Leach, and welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Also with us, Michelle Perkins, president of New England College. And Michelle, nice to see you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
And joining us from Ohio, Richard Vetter, director of the Center for College Affordability and Productivity. And Richard Vetter, welcome back. And thank you also for being with us.
Glad to be with you.
Well, and Richard, I want to start with you, actually, since you have really been out front on this idea that college is too expensive. It needs to be less expensive. What do you think about the president's idea, ranking colleges based on what he calls value?
Well, I was delighted to see the president call attention to the issue and say that colleges need to be held to account. And I'm glad to hear him ask for more information be provided to consumers. I'm not terribly optimistic that his proposal is going to dramatically change the game. And by the way, I'm in the rankings business myself. I do the rankings for Forbes magazine of colleges and universities. And I certainly have no objection to the idea that we provide information to consumers on the cost of colleges and maybe some sort of value proposition data and bring that to their attention. Whether the president, I think the government in many ways is part of the problem, not the solution to this issue, because the student loan programs and so forth, I think, have contributed to the rise in costs. And so I'm not sure the government's going to get us out of it either.
Well, and I definitely want to dig into this issue that you've raised so often, Richard, of student loans. Federal aid is part of the problem. But to the rest of our panel first, and Michelle Perkins, I'd love to hear from you, too. What was your reaction when you heard the president say, let's rank colleges based on this assessment of a good value?
Well, I think it's commendable that we are concerned about the cost of higher education, and all of us in the academy are concerned about that. But I was concerned about developing a ranking system which wouldn't take into account all of the complexities of things like graduation rates and costs, because many of us do have very generous financial aid budgets, for instance. And so I think that it has the potential for some serious unintended consequences if we are to be judged on a single statistic without having the ability to really delve into what that statistic means.
Yeah, and a couple other people, a lot of other people, have used that same phrase that you use, Michelle, unintended consequences. Just give us a little bit more what you mean by that.
Well, for instance, there's a lot of swirl in enrollment at colleges like mine, for instance. Even though we have a certain number of students leave our institution, almost all of the ones who leave go to another institution. They do well. They graduate. So they've had a positive experience. And we enroll about 100 transfer students a year who come in from other institutions, for the most part from community colleges, and they have a very high graduation rate, but that's not actually factored into the official definition of graduation rates.
Yeah, so the devil's in the details.
The devil's in the details.
Yeah.
Yes.
Chancellor Leach, what do you think? New Hampshire, as you well know, has the distinction of being last in the nation in terms of per capita state aid to our institutions of public higher learning. What do you think about the president's idea?
Well, I think there were two themes that came out of the president's comments. One was the focus on affordability. The other was the focus on the value proposition. And I think for all of us in higher ed, we need to be concerned about both of those. And I actually am pleased to see talk being focused around the value proposition and not just the cost factor, because it's not just a matter of how much it costs, but what are you getting for that? The challenge is going to be on what you measure, because when you look at value proposition, it's a very nuanced thing to measure, and you also have to look at what kind of behavior are you incenting with that. If you're if you look at some of the issues that Michelle just raised, you have to be able to incent colleges, particularly those that are focused on access, to also be able to take risks. So if you've got high risk populations that have a lower chance of ultimately succeeding or earning high wages, you don't want to leave them out. You still want to be able to offer them an opportunity to advance through higher ed. The other area that I think you have to look carefully at is areas where you have high needs but not necessarily high pay. So if the scorecard and the measurement is really about what the salary is at the end of the day when a student graduates, you might not be incenting people to go after teaching jobs or other kinds of areas where the pay isn't so high, but the need is great.
Yeah, that was a big problem that a lot of people had with this proposed ranking, wasn't it, Chancellor Leach? Adding in how much students make upon graduation, that's implicitly saying, let's offer more engineering degrees and, you know, history and French just aren't important anymore.
Yeah, I think, as I said, there's a lot of nuance to it. I think it's going to have to be a multifaceted approach for it to really work. I do think, at the end of the day, accountability, transparency is something that we have to address, and I think it's important for all of us in higher ed to figure out how we do that, whether it's with the help of the federal government or if we figure it out on our own. I think the general public, as affordability has become more and more of an issue, we're wondering what are they getting for what they pay for, and we've got to be able to demonstrate that.
Okay, and Paula Blank, this is a big issue for you.
It is, and we've been working very hard to find new multiple pathways to a degree which are more affordable. College for America, which you mentioned, Laura, is the most sort of dramatic example of that. I think I would agree with my colleagues. I'm actually sympathetic, and I think they are too, to the president's desire to get greater transparency. It's something our industry has resisted for a long time. But what you measure comes to matter, and I think as a general principle, you should hold me as an institution accountable for what I can control. So you should hold me accountable for the outcomes of my students. Do they know what I say they'll know when they graduate? But to hold me accountable for a labor market I can't control, I might flip the coin. I might say, okay, can I hold you accountable that there will be jobs awaiting these graduates when they come out? Because we know last year's graduating classes nationally, didn't matter where they were from, struggled to find jobs. Those jobs weren't waiting for them out there. So here's what I would argue. We as an industry could sort of stand back and resist this, or we should take some responsibility for owning the challenge. And we should say back to the administration, here are some ways to think about this. And what I fear I'm seeing too much from One DuPont, which is sort of where all the higher ed lobbyists sort of reside, is a lot of stone throwing and not a lot of alternative solutions.
Our phone number for you to join us with your own ideas about possible solutions to the high cost of college is 1-800-892-6477. Also, your reaction to what the president is proposing, some sort of a ranking system of value for that college education and tying federal aid to that ranking. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. I want to return to what you said a couple minutes ago, Richard Vedder, that you have made the case that student loans, federal financial aid, is part of the problem of why college is so expensive in the first place. Elaborate on that a little bit more, Richard, if you could, please.
Well, there's some debate on this point, but I think a large part of the public believes, and many professional economists as well, that when you increase, you give students the ability to borrow a lot of money to go to school, they take that proposition up and they demand higher education more than they would otherwise. And that makes it a little bit easier for colleges to raise their fees to a greater extent than they would otherwise. The colleges then get in a little more money than they would otherwise. And some people say that sort of helps perpetuate sort of an academic arms race that's going on with colleges hiring more and more administrators, building more and more luxurious facilities and so forth. I think there's debate on that, but I think at least that there's a good argument for that. So the government, in reexamining what we should be doing about higher education costs, may want to reexamine its own financial aid programs, and maybe we ought to start rethinking the way we handle those programs.
Yeah, and this is a big issue, and you're right. Some people say, no, we need that continuation of financial aid. But others say, as you have said, Richard, that it just helps raise the sticker price. Michelle Perkins, what do you think?
Well, I think that it really depends. And there's such diversity in higher education that you really can't generalize across all institutions. I know for my institution, New England College, it's very important that our students receive financial aid. We have a number of very needy students. And without that federal aid, they would not be able to attend. And we have many success stories that we brag about of students who, without the aid assistance from the federal aid, but also our own institutional aid, and we give out over $13 million a year in our own money to help fund students. So it's not just the federal aid programs that help them attend, but the whole package. And we would not raise our tuition if federal aid increased because we are work with a group of students, a large group of students who have high need.
All right. We will talk a lot more about that after a short break and start taking your questions and comments. Join us with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And stay with us because we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And when you become an NHPR sustaining member, you help NHPR collect an additional $10,000. When 500 listeners become sustainers, we'll receive $10,000 from the Mackinish Foundation and cancel a day from our upcoming fall fund drive. You listen to NHPR. Now it's time to support and sustain us at NHPR.org. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from White Mountain Community College, hosting the White Mountains Writers and Book Festival this Saturday with workshops and author Howard Frank Mosier. Registration at wmcc.edu. From Pact World Mutual Funds, a leader in sustainable investing, integrating environmental, social, and governance factors into investment analysis and decision-making, pactworld.com for tomorrow. And the Courier Museum of Art in Manchester presenting Africa Interweave, an exploration of colorful textiles and cultural trade across the vast continent, opens Saturday. Details at courier.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, tough talk on college costs from President Obama, who said if tuition does not stop rising, federal financing could drop. Some say this attention is long overdue, but others are warning of unintended consequences of a ranking system of college value. We're talking with leaders in New Hampshire higher education, and we want to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Why do you think higher ed is so expensive? Is it still worth the price? How might the costs be lowered? Also, what do you think of the president's idea to rank colleges based on some kind of assessment of their value? And the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And before we go to our listeners, I did want to get your thoughts, Chancellor Leach, and you too, Paul LeBlanc, on this idea that Richard Vedder has posed, which is federal aid is part of the problem. Chancellor Leach, for example, if tuition at, you know, UNH is $15,000, and I'm just throwing out a number here, if it's $15,000, maybe I'm upset about that, but then I get, you know, I get $5,000 in federal loans, so I'm not quite so upset. So it helps keep those costs high. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I think the gap has increased. So the argument that financial aid, federal sources of financial aid or state scholarships have gone up, have allowed or facilitated the increase in tuition, it's not really accurate in this state particularly because, in fact, our state support levels have gone down over the past decade. We're less than we were 10 years ago. And I think if we look at the number of students we've served, it's grown. So as we look at how do we offset the cost increases that we've had, we can't do it with federal financial aid or with state support. We have to find other efficiencies. So that incentive is already there, and I don't think that we've seen, at least not in this state, I don't think too many states have seen the situation where their costs have equaled the increases that they've received in support or financial aid. So for us, it's really focused on how do we close that gap some, how do we reduce those costs as much as we can. We just this past year switched to a self-insurer model at the University System of New Hampshire, and we saved about $10 million by doing that.
This is health insurance for your employees?
Correct. Yeah.
And that's a big cost for colleges.
It's a big cost. That's been a big factor for all colleges in terms of looking at what costs can they control. That's a tough one to control. You know, we were fortunate to be able to be large enough that we could make that switch to self-insure, find those savings. But we need to continue innovating. We need to look at, you know, all aspects of our operations to try to bring some of those costs down.
Yeah, your thoughts, Paul LeBlanc, and then we'll go to our listeners. Lots and lots of people who want to jump in on this topic.
So I would say federal financial aid has been the solution. The reality is that it's been the fuel that's allowed an incredible amount of social mobility in our past. And with the erosion of support for higher education, we have seen less social mobility in the U.S. Compared to places like Spain, Germany, even France, Denmark, others. This really goes to sort of the bedrock issue that I think the president was getting at. That said, this has not been an industry, at least on the not-for-profit side, that's been particularly good at controlling its costs. So our rate of inflation since 1982 is twice that of healthcare. So, you know, we're an industry that makes healthcare look good. That's not a good place to be, right? But Bill Bowen, who's sort of a well-respected commentator on this, talks about a cost-revenue spiral. And he basically says his rule is that institutions raise all the money they can and spend all the money they raise. And because we're not-for-profits, our sense is serve more, always serve more. And that's what American higher ed has done. We really have a shift in fundamental policy that's now saying, wait a minute, maybe outcomes are more important than numbers, so maybe we'll serve fewer. I mean, people are seriously raising the question, should everyone go to college? I think it's a bit of a silly question, but should everyone go to college? And we've got to be much, much better at controlling our costs. But I think there's evidence that that's already happening, and Todd gave you a good example here locally, and Michelle would have many of those as well.
Okay. Well, and as I said before we went on the air, I've got a couple kids coming up, so figure it out in the next 4 or 5 years, and you'll be doing a lot of us a favor. As we talk about numbers, we've posted a graph of the basic tuition at New Hampshire's colleges on our Facebook page. It's real interesting. NHPR Exchange is the Facebook page, so take a look at it if you want to see a comparative chart of the tuition at colleges and universities here in the Granite State. The number for you to join us with your questions and comments right now is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And you can also post a comment on that Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And all of you, let's go first to Wilton, where Doug is waiting. Hi, Doug. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, let me preface my question with a request of your people. There's a couple of sources of money that are flowing into colleges. One is certainly tuition money. And then there's also any state aid and other things that flow directly to the colleges themselves. I hope your guests would be clear about which of those sources of money they're talking about when they speak about aid and so on. Now I'll go to my question. My belief is that if you make something artificially cheap, people will spend more money on it than they need to. For example, if a family feels that the most they can spend on their kids is $10,000, okay, for their college education, And then the government says, well, we'll loan you another $10,000 at very low cost for 30 years. They say, well, geez, I could spend $20,000 on their education. And so they do. And when you throw that extra money into the pot, the colleges will take the money and spend it rapaciously. And so I think that one of the downsides of the plans that have given aid to the families has been that it's inflated their ability to pay, and the colleges have used that money up and spent it unwisely.
Well, and Doug, I think that's Richard Vedder's point. Yeah, thanks for calling, Doug. Richard, go ahead.
Yeah, this idea was first enunciated, I think, in the popular press in 1987 by then Secretary of Education Bill Bennett in a New York Times op-ed, and saying pretty much what Doug said and what I've said. I think there are some nuances here. I think it's not a one-for-one thing that a $1 increase in federal aid means a $1 increase in tuition, but I do think that this has contributed to the ability of colleges to raise their costs. And as I think it was President LeBlanc said, and Bill Bowen has said, that colleges more or less spend every dollar they get, and that they're in the business of trying to provide services, and they view their mission as one of providing services, which means spending money. And when you don't have the profit motive there, the efficiency goals of cutting costs and so forth sometimes get a bit overlooked or downplayed a bit.
So, Richard, and we could fill many hours of programming with this, but I'll ask you anyway. So what would happen if all the federal subsidies to students and universities went away? Michelle Perkins talked about, you know, that low-income student who maybe couldn't afford to go to college without that federal grant or loan. So what would happen to those kids if the federal money went away?
Well, right now we have a huge federal loan and grant program, and even Pell Grant programs, $35, $40 billion a year. It would be a very disruptive and create a lot of hardship to overnight withdraw those programs. I don't think anyone is seriously talking to that. But it may be possible over a period of time to be more selective in the rewarding of federal aid. For example, there are a lot of people in middle and fairly above average income groups that are getting aid. Even Pell Grant money is going more and more to people with income, say, of $70,000, $80,000 a year, not necessarily very wealthy families, but people that are certainly not in the poverty range. And so maybe we ought to rethink the kind of aid we provide to some of these folks as part of a way of trying to get away from being 100% dependent on the federal government to finance college education.
Yeah, Paul LeBlanc, what do you think? Maybe not get rid of the federal aid, but pull back.
So I don't think anyone's thinking about getting rid of federal aid. This would mean a colossal collapse of America's higher ed system. It would literally go away. There's $153 billion of federal aid that enters into the system every year. But I do think that what you will see is greater controls. And it will be tied, I suspect, to things like rates of tuition increase. There's going to be an attempt to rein in the level of increases that we have seen. But there's enormous, enormous resistance across the industry. This sort of thing. But we need that aid if we're going to continue to think about higher education as a key to social mobility. Just sort of one fact, right, that in America today, if you're born in the lowest quintile of income, there's a 60% chance you will live your life and die poor.
Yeah, and we've heard that is
right?
A trend that's even hardening, that it's
harder
and harder
exactly.
To get and out of that.
And what Pew will tell you in their most recent research report on this question is that your chances of moving out of that poverty level are three times greater if you have a college degree. There's no question that a college degree is still an incredible return on the national investment. We just have to be better about how we control it. And what I think is happening, the president said in his speech, essentially, the endless flow is gone. Whether you're a fan or a critic of higher education, the sustainability model that's brought us this far is no longer available to us in quite the same way.
Well, thanks for that phone call. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. And Michelle Perkins, too, I'm so struck by what Paul LeBlanc said a couple minutes ago. He said the rate of inflation for college tuition is even more than healthcare, making healthcare look good. What's behind that? That seems just crazy to me.
Well, if you do look over the longer period, that's the case, although in the past 5 years, at least for private colleges, tuition has increased at a much lower rate. And then, of course, institutional aid at a college like mine has increased significantly. We do look very carefully at what we charge every year, and we don't raise tuition cavalierly. We don't make money on our undergraduates. We are an institution that needs to be solvent. We're tuition dependent. We're not highly endowed. Again, colleges differ widely across the nation. Some have very big endowments. We do not. So when we increase tuition, we're very careful. I think the federal aid system should be revamped. And for instance, one of the things that we're doing at New England College to help students complete sooner and at a lower cost is to have a 12-month calendar for students, and that in the summer, and also all colleges do have summer programs, but our plan is to grow so that students can attend 12 months out of the year full time and graduate sooner, get into the workforce sooner, and complete with spending less money. But the federal aid system is really set up to service students who go during the academic year. And if you want to go longer, you don't get more aid, Stafford Loan or Pell Grant.
So if schools want to innovate like you are, the feds need to sort of come along with that.
Yes. For instance, the Stafford Loan, you have a lifetime cap at $31,000. And I'm not arguing that that should increase, but rather if you want to accelerate your program, you should be able to obtain funding for full-time study that will help you pay for your tuition.
All right. Lots more people who want to jump in. Jillian's waiting in Hudson. Hi, Jillian. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband and I are graduated from UNH about 5 years ago, and we're still paying student loans. And one of the things that really bothered me when I was there, and I know this is a problem at other colleges too, is that, you know, students who are not involved in athletics are subsidizing athletics programs via scholarships, you know, increased facilities, things like that for, you know, sports that really aren't, you know, I went to college to get a degree, to get a good job, not to, you know, watch sports. And I understand, you know, at UNH hockey probably brings in money for the school, but there are scholarships and facilities built for track and sports that, you know, probably aren't helping bring money in.
Well, Jillian, thanks a lot for calling in. And I just want to share with you also an email from Kathy, who's kind of saying the same thing that Jillian is. She says, I'm trying to afford UNH along with tuition. I'm being charged another $3,000 for use of the gym, pool, movie theater, healthcare center. I won't be using any of these things because I am a commuter. I have my own gym membership near my home, my own doctors, my own healthcare centers to go to. But UNH makes me pay for things I don't use. So here we've got Chancellor Leach, Jillian, not really caring about track and football. And we've got Kathy saying, look, I don't care about the health center and the gym. What about that? Is that another way to tackle these costs?
Yeah, there's a couple of points I'd like to make. One is that the bigger part of our ability to offset in-state student costs comes from out-of-state students. So if we look at, you know, how much we get from the state, we you know, that amount's increased this past year. Really advanced our partnership with the legislature and the Senate, and the governor has been very supportive of bringing that up. But it still isn't enough to cover the cost difference between in-state and out-of-state tuition. So that cost difference really gets made up for by the fact that we're able to attract out-of-state students to our institutions, and that in many ways that ends up helping to subsidize the cost for in-state students. So to ensure that those institutions are attractive enough to bring in out-of-state students, we need to make sure that, you know, we're meeting the needs of those students, that when students want to come and live on campus, they want those amenities, they want those kinds of things that they expect a world-class institution to be able to provide. So we have to be competitive on that front. The other thing is we are cautious about bringing in student input when we advance many of these kinds of activities and investments. And Student Senate at UNH, I know, has a voice in many of the decisions that are made around at least having a voice around some of the student fees that get charged. So there are those opportunities for student input in trying to help ensure that what's provided is ultimately what the majority of students are interested in or want. And then the last thing I'd say is that I fully recognize that there are a lot of students who are looking for different kinds of options, and they're not looking for the sports teams. They're not looking to live on campus. And from that sense, we've tried to provide a larger variety of options for students who are looking for, you know, less frills, still looking for a focus on teaching and learning. So, for example, within the university system, we have Granite State College, which provides the lowest cost bachelor's programs in the state. And that's very much just focused on the teaching and learning part. We know our students are more interested in the affordability issue than they are about extracurricular activities.
In that
or
four-year campus experience.
That's correct.
Yeah, that some people think is part of it, and other people say, no, I really just need to get my degree. Thank you very much.
And at the same time, you know, I do want to emphasize that no matter how much something may be attractive to students, we also have to look at how can we get the most bang for the buck and make that the most cost-effective service or support that we can possibly do. So when we look at building a new facility, or we look at offering some kinds of new services, or we look at some of the amenities that students are interested in, cost is still a factor, and we still have to really be focused on trying to minimize that cost impact to students.
Well, wow. We could do, again, many, many more hours on this. Real quick to you, Paul LeBlanc, because I know this idea of not everybody wants that sort of classic four-year, go to the football game on Saturday experience.
And that's the key point, is that we have to be careful when we have these policy discussions about which higher ed we're talking about. So that traditional coming-of-age residential living on campus for 4 years, that's only about a third of America's college students today. Right? You have this huge population of working adults who are looking for a degree pathway. You have poor people looking for degree pathways. You have a myriad way. And we tend to have all of our conversation, most of our conversation, around that most expensive to offer model. And
that's not the reality.
It's not the reality of the bulk of American college students today. And in that one piece, it's very hard to control cost, and we're all complicit in this. So Jillian's an exception here. More often than that, remember, there are only about 200 institutions in this country who deny more students than they accept. Everyone else is competing for students. And when I have parents come on campus and do the tour, and they see that beautiful new $16 million dining hall, and they ask if there's a food court, and how long will I have to wait till my kid's in a single, and can they do study abroad, and is there a club team in field hockey, et cetera? And the next breath is, and why is it so expensive? And I think, because we're all complicit in this, right? And
we all want the nicest and best. We just
don't
want to pay for it.
Institutions want to reach for status, and you know what counts for world class, and why the reach for Division I athletics. There's a whole other piece here we could critique. And all of that rounds up into everyone's complicit, including the government. We have 5 full-time people just dealing with regulatory affairs now, right? So the very same government that says you got to find ways to cut cost are actually imposing more and more regulatory demands that all have costs attached to them. So there's no one bad player in this. Everyone's got good intent, but they're all trying to solve a different problem.
All right. We will take a lot more of your comments and questions. Thanks for that one, Kathy and Jillian. The phone number for you to join us here in The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. Keep those emails short. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Also on our Facebook page, we posted a graph of tuition rates at New Hampshire's colleges and universities. So check it out. It's on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, President Obama and Iran's President Rouhani separately address the UN General Assembly, the U.S. and Iran at the United Nations. Then, the life and legacy of Muppets creator Jim Henson, all coming up on The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Conway Scenic Railroad, celebrating its 39th year featuring fine dining on the Notch Train. Schedules, menus, and ticket information online at conwayscenic.com. And from White Mountain Oil and Propane in North Conway, featuring the Rinnai Heater and intelligent heating solutions for homes, additions, condos, and vacation homes, whitemountainoil.com. New Hampshire weather, partly to mostly sunny for today. High temperatures in the 60s, partly cloudy tonight. Lows from upper 30s to mid 40s. It'll be partly to mostly sunny tomorrow. Highs mid to upper 60s. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow in The Exchange, we look at an update on breastfeeding in New Hampshire, the trends, and some of the conversations around this, including workplace accommodation. Email us ahead of the show at exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page at NHPR Exchange and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in the Exchange, leaders in New Hampshire higher education talk about rising college costs and President Obama's ideas to tie federal aid to some sort of assessment of value of a college education. Join us 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And before we go back to our listeners, Richard Vedder at the Center for College Affordability and Productivity, I did want to get your thoughts on what Paul LeBlanc raised earlier, that, you know, nobody wants to pay a lot of money. On the other hand, when they come to a college campus, they want to see the best science labs, the best cafeterias, and the best athletic facilities. So, you know, colleges are sometimes stuck in a hard place there. What do you think?
Yeah, he has a good point. There are a lot of parents and a lot of kids that growing up in an age of affluence, they want their children and the students themselves want nicer dormitory rooms than their parents had or grandparents might have had. They want private baths. They want climbing walls. They want all of these amenities, and they do add a lot to the cost. And it is true, as I think he and others have pointed out, though, that there is a diverse audience in higher education. There is a small number of people who are gung-ho about intercollegiate athletics, and they are quite happy to pay those fees. But I think the bulk of the population agrees with the earlier caller who thinks that we've got those have gotten excessive and that we've gone too far. So yes, we've had a sort of a country clubization of higher education to some extent, and that has been a cost driver in the residential schools. And those schools will persist because there are people around who want them. But there are also people around who want the Walmart model, the lower cost, no frills model. And I think we need to, more and more attention will be addressed to that model in the future.
Let's take some more calls if we could. And Tracy's waiting in Peterborough. Hi, Tracy, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you very much. I believe that community colleges play an important role in providing an affordable and accessible education, particularly for anyone who's working and going to school at the same time. Many people in my own hometown don't realize that it was once the home of one of the first community colleges in our state, Monadnock Community College, which was in operation from 1957 to 1980. My question is, are there any plans to expand the community college system in New Hampshire to afford additional satellite campuses such as River Community College's campus in Keene?
Yeah, Tracy, thanks a lot for calling. And Ross Cattell, the chancellor of the community college system, is not here, but I think you can probably address that, Chancellor Leach, because there's a lot more feed-in than there used to be. Yeah. Students starting out at the community college level, getting some of those basic courses out of the way, and then really pursuing that degree at one of your institutions.
Yeah, the first point I'd like to make is community colleges are an excellent pathway for affordability. It is one of those options where you don't have the residential experience of some of the higher cost options, so it makes it more affordable. And one thing that's been extremely important for me and my colleagues, both within the system and also here at the table and around the state, has been those pathways for community college students to leave their community college experience after obtaining completion there, obtaining their degrees, and being able to really apply that in its entirety into various programs around the state so that they can continue on, get their bachelor's, not be penalized because they took a lower-cost two-year option.
Yeah, that's a big change just in the last 15 years.
And that's one that we've put a lot of emphasis on. We have a website, NewHampshireTransfer.org, and that website is specifically geared to helping students find those pathways and make it as easy as possible for them to take their credits and parlay them into a bachelor's program. One of the things I do know this community college system is doing to expand its access is making more and more of what it has available online as well. And as we look at the state and we look at the state's infrastructure, initiative UNH was involved in the BTOP initiative to try to bring dark fiber across the state and open up access throughout the North Country and the rest of the state to high-speed internet access is giving us an opportunity to really open up that access virtually, both through the community college system and also through the university system and through the private colleges as well.
Tracy, thanks a lot for that call. And here's an email that came in from Tess, who says, parents and students need to become educated consumers. University finances need to become more transparent. Those paying tuition need to ask how their tuition dollars are being spent. Ask how much the president, provost, chancellor, and coaches are being paid. Ask how much full-time tenured track professors are paid in each department, and how many professors are adjunct or part-time. What is the percentage of administrators to faculty? Tess says there have been significant changes in the structure of university staff, not always in the best interest of students or faculty. She says, I taught at Granite State College for years, loved the work, but had to leave because at the top of the pay scale, I was earning $2,000 a course with no benefits. Full-time administrators made much more than I did and had a good benefit package. Tess, thank you for the email. And Michelle Perkins, maybe to you or Paul LeBlanc, you know, this does come up. What's the pay of top administrators and how does that influence the cost of college?
Well, the pay for top administrators is available publicly. You can look it up on the IRS 990. So that is available for anyone to look at and evaluate. In terms of transparency, we all have to participate in something called a net price calculator, where if a student is interested in knowing what they can expect in terms of financial aid and what they would pay, you can go and put in data and have a pretty quick response that tells you what you would expect. So I think we are all pretty transparent and getting even more so in letting students know what they will pay.
So you sort of have a calculator, Michelle?
It's actually a requirement. We are all required to put that on our websites now.
So I would input, you know, my family's income, what sort of degree I was interested in, and so forth, and that would give me an idea of what I would pay, apart from the sticker price.
Exactly. So you could get an idea of what kind of need-based grant or scholarship you could get and what you would pay coming to an institution.
Yeah, Paul, what do you think? This does come up. People sometimes get frustrated. They say, hey, you know, tuition is high and administrators are making nice salaries.
Sure. Probably are in some cases. And, you know, if you're a critic, it's an easy place to sort of latch onto. But I think fundamentally this issue of what are all the inputs and what do they cost is really going to give way increasingly to what are the outcomes, and we're going to worry less about that. So our whole system is built on inputs. How big is your library? How many PhD-trained faculty do you have? How many adjuncts, as an example, she used in her call? Do you have Division I sports? All of these are signals that this must be a good place. And I think right now what we're seeing is a shift in the country where people are saying, you know, we don't actually trust those signals any longer. Let's look at outcomes and use those and be more transparent about the outcomes. And that's fundamentally what the president called for.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He called for exactly that, Paul. He said graduation rates, debt loads, student earnings upon graduation. And yet many in higher education don't like that either.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, it's who likes to be held accountable? So it's a kind of accountability. That's one. Two, there's real fear, and it's a genuine and I think well-grounded fear that if you measure the wrong things or you do this in a clumsy way, you're going to sort of skew behavior. Some of this is that education is involved in a messy thing, which is the development of human beings. Some of the outcomes aren't known for 20 years, right? So I had lunch with a student, an alumni recently, who said, you know, I hated that arts class I took, but I'm doing this sort of renovation work in someone's home and I'm sort of giving them prices. And we ended up talking about Child of Sam's painting on the wall. And he was so impressed, I knew. And we ended up getting the sale. Who knew? And I thought, well, you know, fundamentally as educators, we think we know. But you have to sort of trust that these things are, you know, so we tend to be so focused on jobs right now. And for good reason, we're in a sort of jobless recovery. But in reality, this what we do, this endeavor, is much bigger than what job you get straight out of college.
Well, thanks for that comment. And here's another one that just came in. This is from Robin, who says, government ratings of colleges is a dreadful idea. If you think U.S. news ratings have too much influence on applicants and their parents, just wait, Robin says, till we have government-issued ratings. No college will be able to initiate any program or activity unless it builds government approval. Richard Vedder, what do you think? And Robin, thanks for the email.
Well, I'm a believer that consumers need to have full information about going to colleges, and if people want to provide ranking information, I think this is useful. It needs to, this information needs to be looked at with care. It's one of many, many inputs into decision-making process. I have some concerns, too, about the government getting in the rankings business. If it is trying to sort of up take over a higher education. I'm a little worried about an excessive expansion of the federal role in higher education. Generally, the strength of American higher education has come to a large extent from its very diversity, from the myriad of many different kinds of colleges, and even different states have different approach. New Hampshire is a high tuition state, low state support state. The state of California historically, or Florida even today, is a low tuition state with a different approach. I think that's great, and I worry about the federal government starting to try to homogenize American higher education a bit too much.
Here's a question I wanted to ask all of you. Maybe, Michelle, I'll turn to you first if I could. You know, we've talked so much this hour about colleges and why don't you folks do more to lower costs, and we focused on the debt burdens that students graduate with. What about, though, Michelle, students and parents? The College Board there was a story recently quoting folks at the College Board a lot, including someone called Stephen Graff. He's a bigwig at the College Board. And he said, families have not saved as much as they used to. Part of a cultural shift, he says, that may be forcing students to take out loans, which is driving talk of debt. I don't know that the family sees itself as the primary source of funds for higher education. The assumption, he says, is somebody else will pay a good portion of it. What about that, Michelle, that parents and students need to look at this as well and save more?
Well, I would agree with that. I think that it's never too soon to start thinking about your child's college education. And I think an educated consumer, it's an important thing to be as you look at higher education. And the good news is that there is a wide variety of choice. And a wide variety of tuition charges depending on what you want to pursue and what path you want to pursue. And so if you believe you're going to be bound for the traditional residential college, it is a good idea to start planning on how you're going to pay for that. But for students who are working with their parents to plan for their education, if you are a good student, that means a scholarship award for you. So every A you get is going to be worth money down the road. So for students out there, you can help really offset your higher education costs by being strong in your high school work.
Have you seen in your years of higher education, Michelle, families and students saving less because they just assume that, you know, the government will give them a loan or they'll get a grant somewhere?
I don't think it's as simple as that. I think people want to save for their children's futures, and they try very hard. But it's challenging. And we work with students as early as possible and their families to help them figure out how they can afford our institution and what the best way to pay for their tuition is.
Yeah. Paula Blank?
Yeah, I'm not sure anybody ever saved enough given our rates of increase. But in this context, in which people, we've seen real earnings actually go down over the last 10 years, and when people's equity in their homes blew up in 2008, 2009, this would be a surprise. So, of course, families are struggling more. And at the very same time, state aid did erode dramatically across the country. So we've had a fundamental shift in the financing model here.
Well, and Chancellor Leach, do families who do save get penalized when they apply for financial aid? Hey, you've got more in the bank. Good job. Thank you very much. And you don't need that grant or loan.
Well, I think the financial aid is somewhat of a limited factor in terms of how much is there. There's not too many families that are going to be able to afford an Ivy League education, for example, based on federal financial aid. They would need to make it up in many other ways. The one thing I would say is for families today, they have more choices and options than they've had in the past. And I think part of what we need to do is help educate the consumer more that there are these options available, such as the community college pathway or the Granite State College without a residential experience, that it is more feasible, I think, than ever to attend college in terms of affordability when you don't factor in the reduced amount of aid that has existed over the past decade. But at the same time, there's more tools now, too, for students to be able to look. I think what Michelle mentioned in terms of the net price calculator is a huge tool. And I think for families today, that's one that they should all be making use of and looking at their different options and pricing and figuring out accordingly what's going to work for them. That transparency wasn't as easily accessible years ago.
Well, let's take one more call if we could. And this is Michael in Dover. Hi, Michael. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much. I really do appreciate the conversation. I'm not going to go ahead and, bash colleges. I was a non-traditional student. that restarted my education in 2008. And, you know, I truly believe in the college experience. I believe in the classroom experience over the online experience. So, and I do believe that there is cost to that. I've also seen it in another form as far as costs are concerned, and that was as a store manager of a small box electronics store, a national store, and have seen departments in from various colleges come in and spend the rest of their budget at the end of the year in a frantic way in order to not only extend the budget that they have for the next fiscal year, but also to demand more money when they're in front of the legislature. And so when we talk about transparency, I would like to know and understand if there's money left over, why spend it at the end of the year?
Okay, Michael, I'm going to let you go. Sure, just in the interest of time, and I think you've talked a lot about transparency, Paul LeBlanc, so I'll throw that to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, these individual examples, this may be true. And not-for-profits, unlike for-profits, there's reward for having extra money at the end of the year. I mean, this goes back to that central notion, if you try to do more, if you have an extra money, hey, we can get more of this for to help our students. So that part doesn't surprise me. But by and large, I think, you know, institutions now are under enormous pressure to pull back, cut, and find ways to economize. And again, that all plays out in that net financial aid calculator because that's what it really means to an individual. Go in and see what it will cost you to go to this individual institution. Federal government requires us to have those available on our websites. Every school you look at has that device available for you.
So again, the sticker price may be shocking, Paul, but the reality is different. And we do have a graph of those sticker prices at New Hampshire's colleges and universities on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. But again, as everybody has said this hour, for each student it's different. I want to thank everybody for coming in so much. Richard Vedder, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Richard Vedder, Director of the Center for College Affordability and Productivity. Chancellor Leach, thank you very much. It was good to see you.
Thank you.
That's Todd Leach, Chancellor of the University System of New Hampshire. Paul LeBlanc, thank you for your time as well. I appreciate
Pleasure
it.
To be here.
Paul LeBlanc, President of Southern New Hampshire University, and Michelle Perkins, President of New England College. Thank you also for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteers are John Barrett and Alan Cohen. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow in The Exchange, an update on breastfeeding. The practice has increased, but women who want to breastfeed may face barriers at work or out and about in public. We'll talk about some of the research on this subject, as well as questions about where and how moms can do this and how much accommodation the workplace should have to make. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show next at 10 here on NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from Grupponi Automotive Group, providing 6 auto lines, including Ford, Toyota, and Honda, in a relaxed, stress-free sales environment. Driven to Amaze and Bowen online at Grupponi.com. And Northway Bank, proud to announce the opening of its newest banking center in Manchester at 29 Silly Road and opening in Portsmouth later this fall. Details at NorthwayBank.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
Good morning, it's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. The recent election of a moderate cleric in Tehran has raised hopes for improving diplomatic relations between the United States and Iran. President Rouhani exchanged letters with President Obama and is making overtures to other Western leaders. In a speech